Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday evening shiur for Parshas Achrimos. Welcome back. What I hope was an enjoyable Pesach, a pleasant Pesach for everybody. We're just getting back into the swing of ordinary things. This week, we read Parshas Achrimos. At the very end of the Sidra, we find the list of the prohibited sexual relationships, the Parsha of the Arayas. And at the end of there, it says, and again, I apologize, I don't have sheets this evening just because the Yom Tov was not able to prepare sheets, but you'll take my word for it.
What's the title? I'm sorry, I missed. I wasn't here. What's the? Is there a title or?
I didn't pick a title.
Okay, Stamazai. Okay,
pick
go.
A title at the end. Yeah.
No problem.
It has to do with Yom Tov Sheni and Tfilin. Let's call it that.
Okay, good. We spoke about it. Perfect. I wanted to hear about that.
Tfilin. Relevant
again. Great.
Yes, Mitzvah Shem. Yeah. Anyway, so towards the end of the Sedra, at the end of the Parsha Arayos, the Torah says in Parak Yudches, Hosok Chav Gal, Al Titam V'chol Eile Ki V'chol Eile Mitnu Agram Hashem Ani Mishalech. Don't defile yourself with all these base practices and so on, because that's what the Goyim did who lived there before you. And it says in Exposa Kofei, Vatitma Aretz, land became defiled, and Vatokia Aretz Yisrael Shvan, the land kind of spit out its inhabitants. Aretz Yisrael can't tolerate certain types of behavior. That's one of the things we see. And then it says in Posuk Chof Ches, again, Perik Yud Ches, Posuk Chof Ches, the very end of the Sedra, it says, Velo Sokia Aretz Eschem. And you better observe these laws so that the land won't vomit, won't spit you out either, just like it spit out the previous inhabitants and so on. So Rav Soloveitchik made a fascinating point, which actually relates to the Haftarah, which we'll read this coming Shabbos, Halachim Nechushim, from Amos, the Navi Amos, Perek Tes. The Rav pointed out that this is the first time in the Torah where we find the possibility articulated that we could possibly get thrown out of Eretz Yisrael. Up until now, if we think about the Haftachas and Chumash Bereishis, it says, Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the land is going to be yours, your descendants, etc., several different psukim, several different times. In Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu is told to take the Jewish people out, to bring them to this Eretz Zavas, Chalav Adosh, and so on. And so the buildup, of course, to come to Eretz Yisrael. Now, all of a sudden, here in Parshas Achrimos, we see for the first time that there exists a possibility, and of course, we know the possibility unfortunately came true, that we could be thrown out of the land too. That's what appears again in this end of the Sedra, Perek Yud Ches, of Yikur Posek Chav Ches, Velo Sokya Aretz Eschem, the Tama Achemoso, the Taoso. And the Ramban, here at the end of the Sedra, elaborates that Eretz Yisrael cannot, as I alluded to before, tolerate certain kinds of behavior. And some of the ideas that we stand, unfortunately, to get thrown out of Eretz Yisrael if we deserve it, we don't observe the mitzvahs properly. That's a kind of a depressing thought, the first time in the Chumash that this appears. So Soloveitchik noted a very interesting practice that we have. It's not relevant this year. In fact, it's quite rare, the situation that comes up this year. The Haftorah for Ashkenazim, that's listed for Parshas Achrimos, I mentioned before, comes from the Sefer Amos and Treyosar, Perek Tes, and that's read as Haftorah for Achrimos. Now, very often, in fact, in a regular year, not a leap year, this was a leap year, in a regular year, Parshas Achrimos and Kedoshim always doubled up. Now, as a general rule, when we read two sedras, the Haftorah is always by the Solik Minei. It's from the second sedra. Okay, all throughout the times when we have double sedras, the Haftorah is always from the second sedra. Not so our practice with Achrimos and Kedoshim. The Shabur discusses this in Tav Chavav. And other poskim note that when Achrimos and Kedoshim are together, again, it's not relevant this year because it was a leap year, when Achrimos and Kedoshim are together, we do not read the Haftarah of Kedoshim, but rather we read the Haftarah of Achrimos, this Haftarah from Amos Parakhes, Halochiv Nechushim. Not only that, but even if Achrimos and Kedoshim are separate, but there was some other reason why we did not read Parshas, the Haftarah for Parshas Achrimos from here in Parshas, in Amos, okay, there's some reason we didn't read it. For example, every once in a while, it's quite rare, but every once in a while, the Parshas Achrimos is read on Shabbos HaGadol. Very rare. It's, I think, a year when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, and it's not a leap year. Okay, I'm sorry, and it is a leap year. All kinds of rules. Every once in a while, Parshas Achrimos is read on Shabbos HaGadol, in which case, we read the Haftorah of Shabbos HaGadol. We skip the Haftorah of Achrimos. In such a year, when Pesach is over and we resume with Parshas Kedoshim, we do not read the Haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim, but rather we go back to this Haftarah of Achrimos, so as not to omit it, we read Halakim Nekushim. Similarly, in other years, sometimes Parshas Archemos, even when it's separated from Kedoshim, is Erev Rosh Chodesh, Erev Rosh Chodesh Ir. So we read the Haftar of Mochar Chodesh. Haftar is read when Rosh Chodesh is on Sunday, but a special Haftar. So again, we skip the Haftar of Achrimos on the Shabbos and we would have read it for some other reason. So again, we do read it on Parshas Kedoshim instead. So it's very interesting. There are a number of different reasons for this idea. One has to do with the Sedra of the Haftar of Parshas Kedoshim, which speaks about what's called Toivos Yushalayim, and there's a hesitancy, a sort of a distaste in reading that. But what the Rav pointed out is that we do not want, under any circumstances, to omit the Haftarah of Parshas Achrimos. So therefore, even when Achrimos and Kedoshim are doubled, okay, in a regular year, not a leap year, we read Achrimos, the Haftarah, not Kedoshim's Haftarah, which is the usual pattern when you have a double Seder to read from the second Seder. If Achrimos is Kedoshim, so we don't read the Haftarah of Achrimos then, we read it for Kedoshim. If Achrimos is Mocha Chodesh, again, we read the Haftarah by Kedoshim. Why? Why? So again, one thing is because we're hesitant to read the Haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim. In fact, again, we have that situation this year. The regular Haftarah of Parshas Kedoshim, I read somewhere, I didn't check was accurate, the entire 20th century, we read it six times in the whole 20th century. So it's quite rare. Actually, Rav Soloveitchik mentioned the minig in Europe, in Lita, was even when Achrimos and Kedoshim were separate like this year, with nothing special on the Haftarah, on the Shabbos of Achrimos, so you read Alok of Nechushim twice. You read the same Haftarah 2 weeks in a row. We'll have to see what the shuls will do next week. Anyway, it's not our topic tonight, but what's the idea of being so concerned not to possibly skip the Haftarah of Achrimos to make sure we don't go through these sedras, Achrimos and Kedoshim, without reading the Haftarah of Achrimos? The Rav pointed out because the very end of that Haftarah says that there'll come a time when we return to Eretz Yisrael, the last pasuk, Unatatim alad mosom. It's Haftarah for the Navi that the is a time where we'll be replanted, so to speak, in our land. There will come a time where we'll be replanted into that and we will not be driven out again. And the Rav said we need to have that nechama. When we come to Parshas Achrimos, or read the pasuk I referred to earlier, the very end of the Sedra, that we stand to be driven out of Eretz Yisrael, like the other nations were vomited out, like it happened to us too, and of course it did happen to us. So that's a very depressing thought. Again, the Rav pointed out the first time in the Chumash that we have such a possibility articulated. So therefore, he suggested we cannot read those psukim at the end of Parshas Achrimos and hearing about being driven out of Eretz Yisrael without reading the Nechama of the Navi Amos, who said that there'll come a time in the future when we will be brought back to our land, and this time will not be thrown out. Below Yenoshu, Malad Moslem, this time we won't be thrown out again. A very, very beautiful interpretation suggested by Rav Soloveitchik. So with that in mind, I'd like to look this evening at something which, again, we just experienced a couple of days ago at the end of Pesach, this past Tuesday. And of course, we living here in Chutz Lartz experience at the end of every Yom Tov. And that is a major difference. One of the major differences between living in Eretz Yisrael and not living in Eretz Yisrael. We've been driven out of Eretz Yisrael. We live in the diaspora, those of us who do. And we have a practice which is limited to the Jews in the diaspora. And that, of course, is the issue of Yom Tov Sheni. That we have an extra day of Yom Tov that is not observed in Eretz Yisrael, as we all know. And I'd like to look at that for a moment. If we think about it for a second, it turns out that there were, according to the Torah, there are only 7 days, or a total of 7 days during the course of the year when we have Melacha forbidden. This is not what I'm talking about Shabbos, but I'm talking about Yom Tov. 7 days of the year when there's no Melacha permitted when it's Yom Tov. And that is, according to the Torah, 1 day of Rosh Hashanah, 1 day of Yom Kippur, that's two. The first day of Sukkot is three. Shmini Atzeres is four. The first day of Pesach is five. The last day of Pesach, 7th day of Pesach, six. And finally, the 1 day of Shavuos, Midoraisa, 7 days. Okay? And that's the way the Torah presents it. In Eretz Yisrael, to this day, they have one more because they have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, so they have 8 days. In Chutz Laaretz, we have 13. So it's almost double the original total. Right? An increase from what? That's a math, 86% something. Increase from 7 to 13 days because we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah and we have, okay, one day of Kippur, not the same, but 2 days at the beginning of Sukkot, so that's 25. 2 days at the end of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah. Now, Simchas Torah is really just the second day of Shmini Atzeres, right? There's no Yom Tov per se called Simchas Torah. That's why in the Kiddush and in the davening on Simchas Torah, we don't say, Latite Enlanus Yom Simchas Torah Zeh, just Yom Shmini Atzeres, Shmini Chag Atzeres, Shmini Atzeres Achar, whatever your Nusach is. But there's a reference to Shmini Atzeres. It's the second day of Shmini Atzeres. So what are we up to now? That's already seven, just in the month of Tishrei. Right? 2 days Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, 2 days the beginning of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah at the end of Sukkot, 2 days the beginning of Pesach, 9, 2 days at the end of Pesach, the 78th day, and 2 days Shavuos. That's a total of 13. So we have this concept of Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goyos. What exactly is that all about? That is a, you know, we assume it's a rabbinic decree. Actually, I'm not going to go into details now, but there's some discussion we've shown him as to exactly what the nature of that practice is. Basically, just to review very quickly, it has its roots in a suffix, in a problem, because we know that the Jewish holidays are presented in the Chumash as occurring on particular days of particular months. So the Torah tells us, for example, we just finished Pesach, so we know that on the 15th of Nisan, on the 15th of Nisan is Pesach. But when will the 15th of Nisan be? Well, that depends, of course, on when the 1st of Nisan is. And when will the 1st of Nisan be? That depends upon when Beis Din will declare Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you know, based on testimony that people saw the new moon and so on. We know that it takes the moon 29 and a half days to go around the earth. Okay, that's a scientific fact. The 29 days, 12 hours and change, okay, to rotate around the earth. So a month, in terms of the rotation of the moon around the earth, a lunar month is 29 and a half days. We don't make Rosh Chodesh in the middle of the day on a half day mark. So every Jewish month is either 29 days or 30 days. You never have a 28-day month like February. You never have a 31-day month like January and December and various other months on the solar calendar, secular calendar. But we always have either 29 days or 30. It usually alternates, but there are exceptions on our topic right now. But that's the way the lunar month works. It's 29 days or 30 days. So whenever you come to day 29 of the outgoing month, or we come to the end of a month, we're coming next week, right? The Shabbos Baruch and the Shabbos are coming next week to the 29th of Nisan. So when you come to the 29th of Nisan, there's only two possibilities as to what the next day will be. It will either be the 30th of Nisan, the 30th of the old month, in which case the old month will be called Mole, a full month, in which case Rosh Chodesh, the first of the month, will be the following day. We observe Rosh Chodesh on the 30th also, but the first of the month on a calendar will be the next day, okay? Or the day after day 29 will already be the first of the new month. And the outgoing month will have been a 29-day month we call Chaser, right? And the practical difference for us is whether it's 1 day of Rosh Chodesh or 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. If the outgoing month is a Chaser, there are 29 days. And the outgoing month, the next day is the first of the new month. So that's the only day of Rosh Chodesh, 1 day of Rosh Chodesh. If the outgoing month ends up having 30 days, okay, then we observe the 30th as Rosh Chodesh and the first day of Rosh Chodesh, and the first, which is the next day, the first of the new month, is the second day of Rosh Chodesh. This is all known. Again, the Rambam spells all this out in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh based on Gemaras and so on. So that's the way the Jewish calendar, so to speak, works. So it's, you know, if you listen, if you ever go to a chasana on the first day of Rosh Chodesh, they'll announce when they read the Ksuba, they'll say Yom Shloshim L'Chodesh, whatever Shehu Rosh Chodesh, whatever the next month is, because the 30th of the old month is what we call the first day of Rosh Chodesh, but the first of the month in terms of the calendar is the next and the second day of Rosh Chodesh. Okay, in the olden days, what did that depend on? So as we know from the Mishnayos and Gemaras in the first parak of Rosh Hashanah, we know that that depended on when day 29 came to an end. Are there reliable witnesses who saw the moon? The moon rotates around the earth. The moon, as we know, gives off no light of its own. The moon bounces off light from the sun, and depending upon the angle, you know, the sun, the earth, and the moon, the positioning. We all thought about a few weeks ago with the eclipse, right? The positioning of the sun, the earth, and the moon. So that's how much light we will see from the moon bouncing off the sun's light. So it depends at what point of the month it is, and what point in its rotation the moon is. So, for example, when the moon is kind of like opposite where the sun is, that's what we call a full moon. That's the 15th of the month because the entire moon is bouncing off the light of the sun. So we see a full moon. Then it gets a little less and a little less and a little less. And actually, the end of the month, there's a period of time, a number of hours, where we cannot see the moon at all from Earth. Not that the moon's not there. The moon's still there. But we can't see it. There's no light. The angle is such that the sun can't bounce any light off it. Then we can see the first sliver of the moon as the moon continues to move a little bit, in its pattern, in its rotation. You can see a little bit, then a little more, et cetera, et cetera. So the Torah tells us that when so to speak, it's not the new moon, it's the same old moon. Okay, but when the moon becomes visible from here on earth, that's Rosh Chodesh. But that was dependent upon people seeing it the night after day 29 and coming to Beis Din, being cross-examined by Beis Din, found to be reliable witnesses, and Beis Din announced Mekudesh, and it'll be Rosh Chodesh. If the moon was not visible, or, you know, there was some other problem, and so on, so the next day would be Rosh Chodesh. Okay, that's the way it used to work. Now, again, I'm oversimplifying, but that's the basic outline. Now, let's say Beis Din declared Rosh Chodesh on day 30 of the old month. That night, the night after day 29, reliable witnesses saw the sliver of the new moon that we call the Molad. That's not exactly what the Molad is, but for our purpose now it suffices. So they saw it and they declared the next day Rosh Chodesh. So now they'd have to let, obviously, all the Jews everywhere in the world know that Rosh Chodesh was declared. Well, in the absence of texts and emails and everything else, it wasn't such a simple task. So what they used to do, as the Mishnah is described in Rosh Hashanah, they used to have a system of lighting fires on various high mountaintops throughout the area. So there's a mountain right outside Yerushalayim, Har Tzofim, Mount Scopus to this day, where they would light, and the Mishnah is described how they'd make these torches and how they'd wave them in different directions and so on. And that would be the signal that Rosh Chodesh was declared. Then the people on the mountain a bunch of miles away, another tall mountain. We know where some of the mountains are today. The Mishnah lists the names of the mountains. We know some of them are today. So the people of the next mountain would see the fire burning, and they know, oh, Rosh Chodesh was declared. So they light their fire. And the people of the next mountain would see, and then the next mountain. So pretty soon, everybody was notified. They knew when Rosh Chodesh was, and everyone was happy. However, as we know, the Mishnah described, there were troublemakers, people who liked to start up with the Rabbanim and so on. And so they would light the fire on the wrong day. Now, the problem is that the guy on mountain number two, he can't see who's lighting the fire. He just sees the fire. So he saw the fire, and okay, they lit the fire. So he would put it up, would be the wrong day, mess somebody up. So they had to abolish that system, as the Mishnahs tell us, and to shift over to what we might call the Pony Express, or the Donkey Express, or horse, whatever they use, okay, whereby the Bezdin would send out shluchim, agents, messengers, with an official report, and they'd go from town to town, letting people know when Rosh Chodesh was. Okay, good. And that's how everybody found out where Shlodesh was. And of course, the problem was that sometimes, let's say the Shluchim, these agents, these emissaries of Bezin, didn't make it to a particular village or a particular town that was far away in time for Yontif, let's say the month of Nisan. So these people would be counting. Now they knew you can't be off by more than one day. As I said before, the cycle of the moon is 29 days and 1.5 days. So each month is 20 and a 30. So you can't be off by more than one day, but you can be off by a day. So as Pesach approached, the people would wonder, wait a minute, so maybe today's the 14th, tonight's already the 15th of Nisan. We don't know when Rosh Chodesh was, so it could be tonight's the 15th. So we better have matzah and maror and all seder tonight, right? Because they're the rice, so we better do it. Okay, then the next night would come, well, wait a minute, maybe last night wasn't really the 15th. Maybe it wasn't Rosh Chodesh till the next day, so we better have another seder. So that's when they started to observe misafek, 2 days of Yom Tov. Okay, and the same thing toward the end of Yom Tov and so on. That's where it started. That's the idea. And that's why, without going into details, are now, but Rosh Hashanah, even close by, they didn't know, because Rosh Hashanah is the first of the month, the beginning of the month. So even in Eretz Yisrael itself, they have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But otherwise, it was really more of the far-flung places that had to observe 2 days. Okay, all this is in the ancient times. Now, in approximately the year 350 of the Common Era, okay, in the 4th century, in the days of a Jewish leader named Hillel Hashani, Hillel II, he was not the famous Hillel of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, but a descendant of his, who was a Nasi in Eretz Yisrael. He, and his Bezdin, decided to work everything out based on a mathematical calculation. Now, we know the Rambam says clearly the Bezdin before knew the mathematical calculation. They understood how the cycle works. They knew the calculation, but they decided they were no longer going to be able to rely on witnesses coming to the Bezdin and testifying and so on for a variety of reasons. Again, the Sanhedrin was kind of falling apart. Rabbinic authority was waning. Various details, and so in fact, they set up a calendar al pi cheshbon, working out a system, a cycle that lasts forever and ever in perpetuity. And we know you have the Torah and others, present how all the calculation works, the different types of cycles, and so on. Everything has all been pre-calculated. So that's called kriya al pi cheshbon. But the mathematical calculation. So we can find out right now, certainly with a computer, but even out without a computer, it will take a little longer. We want to know when Rosh Chodesh Iyar will be in the year 2177. You can figure it out because it's a cycle. Okay, it's all done by mathematics. That's the way it's done today. Again, starting the year 350, the time of Hillel Sheni, more or less, that's the same time as Abaye and Rava were living in Babel. Okay. So with all that as background, the Gemara in Beitza, Daf Dalet, raises a question. Is there any reason today to continue to observe 2 days of Rosh Chodesh? That was originally done misafek, because they didn't know. They really didn't know when Rosh Chodesh had been. You're dealing with Dinim Daraisa. Okay, so should you continue to observe 2 days of all the Yom Tovim? Okay, and because now the people in Golos, since it's all been mathematically calculated, they had the Cheshbon too, so the people living far away could live in the North Pole and still know. Everyone living far away still knew. So now, Lechora, there's no reason anymore to keep 2 days. Okay? Today, here in the United States, we know just as well as the Jews in Eretz Yisrael when Pesach is and when Rosh Chodesh is and so on. You're not sure, look on your fridge. You have a calendar there, right? So it tells you what day every holiday is and so on. We know just as well as in Eretz Yisrael. So that's a question of 8 days in the Gemara that was posed. And the Gemara responds in Beit Zadav, Dalet Sholchom Yitom, they sent a message. No, Hizaru B'minag of Oseitim. They paskin that the Jews, these Jews who had used to have to keep 2 days Mesofek, should continue to do so even though there is no longer any Sofek. And the Gemara says the reason why is because right now we have this reliable mathematical calculation. True. But the Gemara says, Shema, maybe there'll be some kind of a decree in the future. Okay, there'll be some sort of a governmental prohibition against studying Torah, which, as we know, happened other times in Jewish history, in Greek times, in Roman times, and so on. The outlawed Torah study. We know that one of the things, according to our tradition, which the Chashmonaim, earlier tried to do away with, was Rosh Chodesh and the Jewish calendar, and so on. So they were afraid that the situation would deteriorate, and the fixed calendar could be forgotten, and therefore they should continue to do it. That's the Gemara. And so on that basis, Jews outside of Eretz Yisrael, and that's a further question, is Eretz Yisrael the border? That's how the Chiddush HaRitvah writes. He said it means the decree was for outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam proposes that even inside Eretz Yisrael, if there were places which were further away to which the shluchim, the agents, the messengers never got, they'd have to do it too. But we may come back to that later. That's not so much for tonight. But in any event, the Ritvah and Eretz Yisrael assume that Eretz Yisrael was picked as the boundary, and therefore not the further question of how to define Eretz Yisrael. There's some question, for example, to this day about Eilat. Okay, I remember a bunch of years ago, my father was home, was going for the part of Yontif to Eilat, and when he lived in Eretz Yisrael, and I said to him, "Don't ask me how many days of Yontif I think you should observe Eilat." He said, "Don't worry, I'm not asking." Okay, he said, "Check with another rabbi." I mean, there are many rabbanim who. Well, make a lot. Anyway, without going into, but be that as it may, Eretz Yisrael is picked as kind of the cutoff point. But in any event, we continue to observe it today. Now, there's a big question what the nature of this sort of decree is. Okay, the Gemara's lashon is Yizaru b'minag avoseichem yedeichem. It's a minig. It's a custom. Okay, Rabbi Tam in Tosas learns like that that it's a minig. Okay, now the problem with understanding it's a minig, of course, is so how do you make a bracha? How do we make all the brachas, the second night of Pesach, on Alchus Matzah, Alchus Mor, Davening, Shechiyonu, all these brachas, if it's only a minig, so usually we don't make a brach on a minig. Okay, so again, that's an important, interesting subject. There are some minhagim, Tosas is Tosas and Sukkah of Memdal Amud Beis, where the Talmud explains, there are sometimes we do make a brach on a minig. Okay, the Balamor also in the Natsugi in Beitza, also says that it's a minig, but it's a minig that, spread to all of Klal Yisrael. Others say a little bit differently. I'm sorry, not the Bal, not in Beit, in Psochem. Okay, in the page on the page of the Rif. That's where the Balamor makes his comment. The Rambam seems to kind of put the two together. The Rambam kind of says it was a rabbinic decree to observe the minig. It was a takonim, midrabanan, to observe the minig. Okay, this is an interesting discussion in its own right, as the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Paragraf Alochidalot, seems to say that it's a minig that started as a minig, but Rabbanan codified it into rabbinic law. Whatever it is, but we have this mitzvah. So I'd like to look at a little bit is, if we think about it for a moment, it's quite a mitzvah, let's assume it's a mitzvah Rabbanan, like the Rambam says, it's quite, that's how others say it also, but it's quite a statement. It's a very costly minig in certain ways, right? And as I said before, it increases the number of days, almost doubles the number of days that you have to be observed. Now, I'm fortunate that I work in yeshivas my whole life and so on and so forth, but I was actually discussing over yonder with one of my sons-in-law, you got to take a lot more vacation days, right? I mean, instead of seven, especially depending on how the way Yontif lands up, okay, it could be all weekdays. Sometimes it's Shabbos Sunday or whatever, you're not working anyway, but and people who have stores or in business and so on have to close down the shop. I mean, there's a certain financial cost, if you will, to this to this practice. Furthermore, there are halachic costs. After all, we're making brachas, like I said before. Okay, we're making brachas. Usually we're very careful about brachas when we say sofek drabonon, sofek brachas, a hakel, and so on. Here, all of a sudden, we're making we're making brachas and okay, you want to eat matzah again? Go ahead, but you're making kiddush and hadlokas neiros and yontav shmon esrei and all these things. You know, it's interesting that they were misaking that. You know, for really, there's no doubt anymore. Just to keep an old minig, it's very, very interesting. And what I'd like to look at for a few minutes tonight is perhaps even more dramatically, we are mevatel the mitzvah of tefillin. We don't put on tefillin. Now, with the first days of Yom Tov, so some people don't wear tefillin anyway on Chol HaMoed. Okay, I don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed anyway. But let's say the last days, right, what we call Simchas Torah, or what we call the second day of Rosh Hashanah, what we call Simchas Torah, the Achron Shel Pesach, the second day of Shavuos. Ordinarily, I mean, this past Tuesday in Eretz Yisrael, this past Tuesday, everybody put on tefillin. Okay, nothing to do with Chol HaMoed. I mean, the first days, some Chassidim and others don't wear tefillin. Okay. So many, most people don't wear tefillin, but in any event, the you know that's a joke, right? But the Litvaks do wear tefillin, and the Yekas do wear tefillin. People should follow their own minhag. But the story about the Litvish fellow who walked up to the Chabad guy by the Kosel Amarov and said, "Did you put on tefillin today?" Right? But the Chabadniks don't wear tefillin like the Chassidim. Anyway, but in any event, how do you do away with the mitzvah tefillin? Mitzvah tefillin's a doraisa. And therefore, this past Tuesday, as I said in Eretz Yisrael, this past Tuesday, everybody wore tefillin. Here, we did not wear tefillin. So how do you go ahead and just make a decree that gets rid of tefillin? So this is a problem which already appears in Rishonim. The question appears in Rishonim. The Rashbo, in one of his tshuvas, in the Chelek Aleph, so in Samech Aleph, Rashbo writes, well, in Yom Tov Shein Shel Goyus, okay, and a Rosh Hashanah and so on, that you know, we know that there are certain kulas on Yom Tov Sheni. Without the details now, regardless of Rachman Otzan, somebody dies. Somebody dies. So strictly speaking, you can bury him on Yom Tov Sheni. Okay? We don't do it today for other reasons than general rule, except in very tight communities where, you know, I think by the Yekas and Broyas they do it. And by the, no, they don't anymore. They stopped it. They used to do it though. No, am I correct that they used to do it? Yeah. But I think by some of the Chassidim, very close communities where they don't have to worry. Now we're worried about Chilul, Yontem, people driving, whatever else. But anyway, if you can get a few Jews to go bury somebody. But strictly speaking, the Gemara says you can bury a person on Yontem Sheni. What we still do is Rachman Letzan, if somebody dies on Chol HaMoed and the Shiva begins after Yontem, somebody dies on Chol HaMoed or Yontem, the first days or the last days, whatever, such that you bury the person, then you don't begin the Shiva till after Yontem's over. But this Yontem Sheni, let's say Simchas Torah, or Achon Shel Pesach, or the second day of Shavuos, actually counts as the first day of Shiva. You don't actually sit Shiva, but it counts. So there are certain leniencies. So the Rashbo is asked in this Shiva, given that we have certain leniencies, he says, so what about, okay, can we say that, perhaps we should say that the Doraisa of Tefillin, everyone agrees that Tefillin is a mitzvah, same as the Raisa, of Tefillin should override this din de rabbanon, call it a minute, call it a din. Let's learn it's a din, like the din de rabbanon, like the Rambam says. But it's a din de rabbanon. Maybe tefillin should override it. On the second,
I forgot my avela stuff. But isn't like, don't we? You said it. But the first day of avela, I'm not sure how it coincides with the chronology. But the first day of avela is the raisa, usually.
Right. We have that.
And that's why it trumps the Achron Shel Pesach.
Right. So that makes this question stronger. Why is tefillin
also with tefillin also? I'm saying
that's what our boy asked. So yeah. He answers, he says, you have to say no, also betulin. We don't put on tefillin. So he says, what do you mean? Okay. The Kaimalan commandom and tefillin mitzvah shazman gromahi, and the skabim and also shame mitzvah shabbos, even told him over bebaltosif, bishum baltosif. We have a rule that you're not allowed to do a mitzvah on a day when it's not appropriate to do that mitzvah. Otherwise, you'd be violating baltosif. So a person sits in the sukkah for the purpose of sitting in the sukkah. Not like likes it outdoors, but for the purpose of sitting in the sukkah. Person sits in the sukkah, so you can, after the sukkah, so you can violate baltosif. Again, doesn't mean a week and a half, but right after sukkah. Okay, anyway, so here we'll say that called, here'll be a problem of baltosif to call my de tikkun kain doraisa tikkun. The Rashbo invokes the old rule is when the Rabbanan made a ruling, they modeled it after the already existing ruling in the Torah. Called the tikkun Rabbanan kain doraisa tikkun. So since we don't put on tefillin on Yom Tov, the regular day of Yom Tov, since they declared that Yom Tov Sheni in Chutzar should also be treated as Yom Tov, so we also don't put on tefillin. And lest you, I mean, we're a little bit surprised about it, but he says we have the rule, okay, that mention here to a second. Okay, there I said Tikkun. And oh well, firstly he said also because Osil Zilzulebe. Okay, because otherwise people will denigrate or not consider Yontif important. If you start playing games, well, you can wear tefillin, you can do that. Yeah, I don't have to take it so seriously. Right? That's human nature. Okay, the moment you give a little bit of a way out, so people won't take it seriously. Tell people, well, it's Yontif, you know, you gotta treat it like the only thing is you can wear tefillin. You gotta treat it like the only thing is you can do this, the only thing you can do that. Ah, people said, forget about it. The whole thing's a bunch of
well, why is there not the same concern by Suk by Ulav and Esrog? We don't take Ulav and Esrog on Shmini Atzeres.
Right. So that I have to get into that. The shorter answer is, and it's a good question. The shorter answer is that let's remember that we daraisa only take Ulav and Esrog the first day anyway. So taking the rest of the week was only drabanan to start with.
Right? But I'll tell you the answer because the answer is you're not changing the Matzias. Matzias is you're taking Ulav and Esrog every day. Here, the last day you're going to say, oh, suddenly put on tefillin, you're changing the whole Matzias.
No, but I understand. You're right. No, but what Josh was asking was, you know, we do sit in the sukkah on
Shmini. But I know, but I get it. But you can't just come out and say, like, hey, we're just going to put on tefillin on the last day of Yom Tov. There you
go. No, I understand. But he wasn't asking about tefillin. He said, why don't we extend a little bit the way we extend
tefillin? Okay, but you
answer the question. But Ulav and Esrog, let's remember, is not a chi of daraisa beyond the first day anyway.
Right.
So that's a little different. But tefillin, there's a concern of zilzul. Okay. That's what Rosh Bor writes. And we have the rule that Sheva al Taisa, we know that the Chachamim can uproot a law from the Torah. They have that authority by telling you not to do something, to refrain, just Sheva al Taisa, just sit and do nothing. For example, as we know, when Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos, we don't blow shofar. The Torah doesn't make such a distinction according to the way we learn it in the Bavli. Torah says you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, well, no matter what day of the week it is. What happens suddenly when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we don't blow shofar? So Gemara explains, well, they're afraid that people end up carrying the shofar without an Erev. What do you mean? So you can uproot a law from the Torah? Rabbanan can make such a thing that you're knocking out a law from the Torah. The Torah says, you have to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And now the Rabbanan can say, well, but if it's Shabbos and there's no air, you know, even if there's an air, but a low plug, you know, we'll keep everybody the same. You might carry in violation of Shabbos and don't blow. But it's a deraisa. The answer is, yesh koch, b'yad chacham, lakar, dovin ha-Torah, b'shev al-taisa. Rabbanan can tell you, according to the Bible, they can't actively tell you to violate something in the Torah. Are the most circumstances they can tell you. Just don't do anything. Just sit. Shave al tais. That's what we're telling here. Sit and don't put on tefillin. So writes the Rashbo. And he writes, you know, bottom line, he says, you know, go take a look. Okay, puk chazi, Miami Depar. Go look. Nobody puts on tefillin. Rashbo is reporting, you know, in the time we've shown him in the late 1200s, he's reporting. Nobody puts on tefillin cholamar on Yontif Sheni. That's the deal. Okay, so that's the tshuva of the Rashbo. Fast forward a few generations, the Ksav Sofer, son of Ksav Sofer, the Ksav Sofer has a tshuva, Chelek Orachaim Simon Yud, where he is bothered by this problem also. I have it here, sorry. Here it is. Okay. This is a tshuva, Ksav Sofer, Chelek Orachaim Simon Yud. The Ksav Sofer is bothered by this also. And he says, you know, what do you mean? What happened to tefillin and so on? It's a little bit difficult. And he discussed a little bit about tefillin anyway, whether it's, you know, what the nature of tefillin is and is the action is. Anyway, he also talks about Shavuos. You know, one of the problems with Shavuos is that Shavuos, why do we ever have 2 days of Shavuos? Right? Shavuos, we know Shavuos is 50 days after Pesach, so who cares? It's not a function of the day of the month. By us, Shavuos is always the 6th of Sivan, but that's not what the Gemara mentioned in the time of the ELP Bezdin, the Gemara beginning of Rosh Hashanah says, Shavuos is Palmim Behei, Palmim Bebav, Palmim Zion. Shavuos didn't always fall out on the same day of the month because it's a function of the 50th day if the Pesach, the Sfiras HaOmer, and so on. So by then you knew when Pesach was, so what do you ever have? The Rambam writes, it's a low plug. We don't make a chilek between the Yom and Tovim. Anyway, Ksav Sofer discussed that a bit, but he says, Nitzta'arti, I was bothered by this, you know, whole question about tefillin for a long time. And then, V'nei sos anocha imrosu shalash bo, v'asher motzos yira isi, then I was so thrilled to come across this tshuva from the Rashbo. I was always bothered by this problem myself, and I was so happy to find out. This question was long predates me. It was a question asked by the early authorities. You know, you have to know not all the Achronim today, all the so many Sfarim are available, you know, the touch of a button, literally, right? You can find all kinds of Sfarim today. One time, even great Achronim and so on didn't have Sfarim accessible. The manuscript wasn't around, but they didn't have it. I remember, okay, you know, Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav was was Nifta 31 years ago, just last week, was the yard site in Chol HaMoed Pesach. And so a couple of weeks after the after he was Nifta, he was Nifta and the Levi was in Boston on Chol HaMoed. But after he was Nifta, they had a couple of weeks later something in YU, like an Azkara in the auditorium. So I remember one of the people who spoke was his son, Reb Chaim, Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. And among the things that he said was, he remembers when he brought home the first copy of the Chiddush HaRashba on a certain Masechta. I'm not sure which, I don't remember which Masechta was, or if he said which Masechta it was. But his father had never seen, they'd never seen, today everything's published and printed. He said he brought home the first copy of the Chiddush HaRashba on that particular, that had just come out on that particular Masechta. And he said when his father, the Rav, looked at it, he said, how did we ever learn this Masechta before? Before seeing that, how do we ever understand this Masechta? Anyway, so the Ksav Sofer says he's so thrilled to find this Tshuva and realize that people raised this question before. And he writes, and Rashba writes, like I said before, poke Kazi Ma'amad Bar, go out and see what the people outside are doing. Nobody wore tefillin. And obviously, says the Ksav Sofer, nobody wore tefillin in the days of Rashba. But he said, I'm a little bit bothered because, you know, one second. So, you know, maybe they should wear tefillin misafik. So it's interesting, the Ksav Sofer says, in his opinion, or he at least advances the possibility, very interesting possibility. He says, maybe when there really was a suffix in the olden days, maybe they did put on tefillin both days because there really was a suffix. Very fascinating idea, no? Okay, I mean, I don't know if he has any documentation necessary for this, but that's what the Ksav Sofer says. He suggests the possibility that at the time of Kiddush HaChodesh Al Pi HaRa'iyah, when these outlying districts, the outlying towns had a real suffix, okay, maybe they put on tefillin with a tenai on a condition, okay? And he said, if today is a weekday good, so I'm having in mind to put on tefillin. If today is really yantiv, then I'm not really having in mind for the mitzvah, so I avoid the baltosif problem. He gives a structure as to how to do that, but it's very interesting. But of course, the question then becomes, so why don't we do the same thing today? Okay.
I know we don't have Makoros, Rebbe, but like, how come nobody proposed that, maybe I saw this somewhere, put it betzina. Like if it's deraisa, like the same way.
Hold the thought. We'll see. Actually, someone who did propose, not necessarily tzina, but maybe that's what he had in mind. Hold the thought. But anyway, this is an Ksav Sofer. He's bothered. He's happy to see the Tshuva Rashba, and nobody puts on tefillin on Yontif Sheni. But he says, you know, at least in the olden days when there was a real suffix, maybe they did it. Okay, but he says the overriding concern here is that osi lezulzule, and people end up doing malacha. Okay. And he says the following. He says, again, I'm not reading the whole thing inside now, but he says, you know, in those days, what's our concern? Like I said before, our concern was if people are going to put on tefillin, so they're going to think that Yom Tov Sheni, it's just, you know, it's one of these rabbinic chumras, it's just a chumra, and we don't have to be so careful about it. And people will be mezalzel in Yom Tov Sheni. That's what the Chazal were worried about. They wanted to replicate Yom Tov Rishon, and they didn't want people having a sort of a negative or denigrated view towards it, and they realize that people can put on tefillin. So how can the Ksav Sofer posit that in those days they put on tefillin according to the suggestion both days, misafik? The answer is because that's exactly the point. There was no zilzel because they did it both days, right? There's no zilzel in one day or the other. They knew maybe today's yontif, maybe the next day's yontif, and therefore there was no zilzel. But here, when the first day of yontif, for sure you're not putting on tefillin. Yontav Rishon, for sure you're not putting on tefillin. Now we know it's Yontav Rishon, but for sure you're not putting on tefillin. We have no suffix on that today. We're for sure not putting on tefillin. So now if you only put it on Yontav Sheni, so then taka will lead to a zilzul, and you know, people will treat it as less important. Okay, and that was the concern. And that also says, Ksav Sofer will explain, why were then Chazal Mekel regarding a mace and a couple other things, a chole, okay? They were Mekel on Yontav Sheni about a couple things that they weren't Mekel on Yontav Rishon. So Ksav Sofer says again, because those are things, I mean, how often does it happen that a guy dies on the last day of Yontif? It doesn't happen every year, every Yontif. Oh, Mitlamo, once in a while, it comes up. Okay, once in a while, somebody's sick, or once in a while, someone says Shiva. It's not everybody, it's not every time. If you're going to make the rule by tefillin, be every Jew, every time, putting on tefillin. That's a zilzul. Once in a while, a case comes up in a community, if somebody dies, they're not worried about that. It's going to lead to big zilzul and people can start doing malacha. They'll realize it's an exceptional case. But here with tefillin, it's every single Yontav Sheni, everybody's putting on tefillin, so then it's going to lead to zilzul Yontav Sheni. Then the Ksav Sofer goes on to ask, okay, but people should not, it's a sinah thing, okay, but put it on without a bracha. Okay, put it on without a bracha. Okay, I mean, maybe that much you should do. But just like on sukkahs, we do sit in the Shmini Atzeres, rather, we do sit in the sukkah without a bracha. Okay, so he says again, because the act of putting tefillin itself is a zilzal. Okay, and then there's another thing. You do it without a bracha, people don't take it seriously altogether. Right? The people won't do it. Right? Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, totally different matter about when he was Rav yet in Russia before he came to New York. He was a Rav in Russia. So he was asked a shaila about the people had to go to the work on the out in the fields very, very early in the morning, way early in the regular Zman. They want to know about putting on tefillin. So he found the Zman, Kula, they put on tefillin. Really, the poskim say at that Zman, you should put on tefillin out of bracha. But he passed and he should do it with a bracha. And why? Because he knows if you tell people to put on a bracha, right? Even though the bracha is not makay. You know, Moshe Moldova Doma, I'll give the same example right now in the middle of the Sefirah. So people who miss a day, oh, I'm out. You're not out. You still have the mitzvah to count the seer every night. You can't do it in a bracha. Okay. But the mitzvah, the bracha is not makev, right? I don't tell people you missed a night. Okay. So count without listening. Nice to listen to someone else make a bracha. Answer me. Okay. And you'll count. But even if you're not someone else making the bracha, you're home alone, whatever. Count without the bracha. Okay. But that's, you know, that's the way people are. You know, if they can't do it, they're going to be mezal. Anyway, that's a tshuva from the Ksav Sofer. Very interesting idea. Regarding this idea, well, we don't put on tefillin. What's interesting is, I just want to share with you, the Ragachover Gon, okay, the Ragachover Gon, Chuvas Tzofnas Paneach, now there are different versions, or different editions, this is the Varsha edition, so it's Chuvas Tzofnas Paneach, Simon Kuf Oz Dalad, Begeder Tefillin Beyom Tev Sheni, our topic, right? It says, Kvar Doshu was there, many people have talked about it, but MS. You should put on, I'm not saying he did this lamaisa. I don't know. But he says, Vadai tzorech laniach tfilin. Ube'emes lo motzin v'shumokum v'shas v'shamig abiyom tefshen laniach tfilin didan. Even though we don't see that anywhere in the Gemara. And he, on the other hand, he wonders, you know, if you don't put on tfilin, why isn't that given? I mentioned before, the Gemara in Yevamos Daf Tzadi says that yesh koch b'yad chachamim Lakor Dovim Nator B'Shev Al Taisa. The Chacham have the authority to suspend the law from the Torah by telling you not to do something. Like the example I gave before, he is shofar when Rosh Hashanah lands on Shabbos, on Tilz Lulav, when Sukkot lands, the first day Sukkot lands on Shabbos, and so on. This should be a perfect example. Okay, this should be a perfect example. The Chachamim uprooted tefillin every Yontif Sheni. Rosh Hashanah doesn't land on Shabbos every year. Okay, the first day Sukkot doesn't land on Shabbos every year, only every few years. Here, the Gemara says the Ragachover should have given an example. Here's a proof that the Chacham are allowed to uproot something from the Torah by telling you Shev Al Taisa. You know, it's an example. Tefillin on Yom Tov Sheni. Yet, says the Ragachover, the Gemara didn't give that example. She proposes the possibility, Lachain Be'emes, he says, Lule HaPoskim. I mean, you know, he says, not for the fact that Poskim said otherwise, Yeshloma Detzorech Laniach Tefillin with Yom Tov Sheni. And he writes, Ein Kan Mokom Laharak Yosef is there. The Tzavtas Pareach, the Ragat Shor, was always very brief in his presentation. It doesn't go into great detail, but he seems to be advocating, at least, you know, as a possibility that, you know, you should really put on tefillin. Again, he says, Lulei HaPoskim, he's well aware of the fact that the Poskim, that we don't do it. But why? He's not so comfortable. Why? If you really put on tefillin on Yom Tov Sheni. Unless you say a little bit different or an additional interpretation than we said before in the Gemara and Beitza Daf Dalet. Gemara and Beitza Daf Dalet said it was like a rabbinic decree, and they gave the reason, the funny reason, that maybe there'll come a time that the cheshbon will be forgotten, the calculation, won't know how to do the luach anymore, we'll have to go back to being Mekadesh based on the moon, and therefore you better keep the old tradition. It's a very, very problematical suggestion, because first of all, do we ever find that such a thing happened all these years later? Did it ever happen? That the cheshbon was forgotten? And second of all, you can ask if that was the concern, so that concern is in Eretz Yisrael too. Right? That concern should take be in Eretz Yisrael also. Right? I mean, if you're worried about them knocking out the cheshbon, so, you know, maybe they'll come a time in Eretz Yisrael also. They won't be. Anyway, so there is another possibility, which the Meshech Chochmah alludes to in his commentary in Parshas Bo, on the Pasuk of Achuras Alechem, Shmos Perak Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis. Okay, he mentioned the following. He says, "Ubezeh yotzilanu tam nifla al hod al komar gemara." He refers to that gemara in Beitza Daf Dalet. Right? We're afraid that the system will get messed up again. Deem Kane, he asked what I just asked. I mean, or I asked what he asked. The kosher gam bechutzard the gam eretz yisrael yalem din echad. The gam eretz yisrael shayach haytam. But that's what Shachar was pointing to. The same thing in eretz yisrael. The tzarach lomar. Listen to this. Mishum de kvar nagu v'have a kemod de lo botel atam. No, they only made it in the outside of eretz yisrael because they were already doing it. They weren't going to introduce a new practice in eretz yisrael. But they would maintain the practice in Chutz Lorets. Okay? And then he says, we have to know this as well. He says, Mekubolim anachnu mirabeinu hagro. It's a tradition from the Gro. The im ki chazal pirshu tamam. Okay? Even by Gzeres, which Chazal enacted and explained the reason. That's what the Gemara Beit HaDaf Dalet said. They gave the reason. They said you should continue in Chutz Lorets to observe 2 days of Yontif because the situation may deteriorate and get messed up in the calculation and how to do the Cheshmo, we've forgotten, whatever else. They gave the reason. But, says the Meshech Chochma, the name of the group, the Imki Chazal Pirshu Tamim, B'chol Zos, Od Hishiru Temunim B'seisel of Avam. There were other reasons which were kept secret. Tamim L'alofim, many, many reasons. Okay, and important reasons. Meaning, Meshech Chochma says, it seems that there were other reasons for things. That's not the only reason. This idea that one day the calculation will be forgotten or that type of problem, that's not the only reason. Okay, there are other reasons why we have this concept of Yom Tov Sheni. And listen to this in Chutz Lorets. And listen to this. You take a look in the Otzar Gaonim. Otzar Gaonim is a collection of the literature from the Gaonim before the Rishonim, approximately 750 to 1,000, roughly in the Common Era. So in that Gaon Beit HaDaf Dalet Beis, there's a tshuva from Rav Haigon, one of the greatest of the Gaonim, Rav Haigon, quoting Rabbeinu Sadja Gaon. Listen to this. He says, "Ki Rabbeinu Sadja Zal Amar Perusho, ki ein sofek meikara el HaKadosh Baruch Hu." There was not the original reason for 2 days outside of Eretz Yisrael was not a suffix. Was not a suffix. Okay? Ela Kodesh Baruch Hu Tziva Es Moshe Avdo V'hu Omar Li Yisrael Ki Be'oretz Yelam Yom Echad U'v'chutzar Shnei Yomim V'chein Hoyom Me'olam. I wouldn't say such a thing, but Rav Haigon is quoting Rav Sajagon. And the Gaonim usually said things which they had tradition for. There's a tradition that they quoted here in the Gaonim that 2 days of Yontif in Chutz Lorets was an old practice. It was already instituted, so to speak. Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe. I'm reading again. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Avdo, Tzivas Moshe Avdo, V'hu Amar Yisrael, Ki Ba'aretz Yalem Yom Echad V'Chutz Lorets Shnei Yomim V'Chein Ha'am Olam. Kol Yisrael Osin below Safek. Nothing to do with Rosh Chodesh and Cheshbonus and so on. Then he said things changed, okay, and they wanted to show that the Chazal wanted to show that the Cheshbon and the Re'i are the same, said reasons for changing it temporarily, but la'achar kach chozu lamod al ikram. There was a stretch where in Chutz Lorets they kept only 1 day, okay, but then they went back to it. V'chutz Lorets shnei yamim. Omar Adonai, again, a quote from Sajigon, but Chuvosu Anche Kabat, someplace, Kigzeira Mimos Hanavim Arishonim, Mechain in Higo Hanavim Rishonim, Zomit Chilas Hagoyos, Shaosin Yomim Tov and Mechutz or Shnei Yomim. And that also addresses another point. Why don't we have 2 days Yom Kippur? Okay, well, why not 2 days Yom Kippur also? And he says, Yom Kippur, Yom Echad, they only made Yom Kippur, that Gzeir, they only made it because presumably it's very difficult, impossible, fast for 2 days and so on. So they worked, according to our reason, it's very tough to understand why there should be no 2 days Yom Kippur. Okay, but according to this, because Kach Gozru, in the days of the Nevi'im, you look at the Netziv in his commentary on the Chum is called Hamek Dover. He has a commentary, sort of twin commentary on the Chum, Hamek Dover and Herchev Dover. The old edition of the Netziv, the Herchev Dover is in the back, but the newer edition is on the bottom of the page. So in Parshas Emor, right before the very end of Perkov Beis of Ayikra, Parshas Emor, right before the Parshas Amoedos, Perkov Gimel, we land on the second day of Pesach. We land on Sukkot, right? The Parshas Amoedos. So, excuse me, Ayikra, Perkov Gimel. So there, excuse me, So there, the Netziv, if the Pasuk says, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, the Netziv also quotes this. He doesn't mention the Gonim per se, but he wrote, he mentioned old tradition. He says, going back to Yoshua, and he mentioned Yechezkel and Daniel. Apparently, this is a very old practice. If that's the case, so then we can understand why we continue to do it. We can understand why we don't wear tefillin. Because this was an ancient Gzerif of the time, going back to Nevi'im. So it's not a matter of a suffix, we're not sure. That's what they instituted. There was a time of Moshe Rabbeinu who was told this. All right, Moshe Rabbeinu's time, nobody lived in Golas. But according to this approach, I think a very fascinating approach from the Gaonim, and that's what the Meshech Chochma alludes to, that the concept of Yom Tov Sheni shall go as an ancient practice, and therefore, we don't have to kvetch different reasons why tefillin. That was the Gzera. They made such a rule going back to, so shall I call it, biblical times. And therefore, now there are other reasons, you know, you need 2 days in Chutzlart to get the Kedusha that Eretz Yisrael takes only 1 day. Okay, there are other nice interpretations, other things you can throw in, you know, why we keep 2 days of Yontem, you know, you don't want to denigrate and so on. But now we understand why Chazal was so concerned not to be Mizalzel in Yontem Sheni, even to the point that there's no tefillin. Because Yom Tov Sheni is not some practice here. We today, everybody is. You know, all cynical people always go, well, we have to have 2 days. We know very well. Today. Yeah, right. It's true. We do. And it's a little difficult. Well, we keep the old minute. You know, certain things everyone complains about, right? Everyone complains about kidneys. Everyone complains, okay. You know, but, well, I have to tell you, this is what my wife said. I don't, the first bite of Pesach, I don't mind Yom Tov Sheni. Okay. I don't mind the rice and the, and no corn for the week. I can live with that also. But can't the rabbis do something about getting the Seder started the first night sometime before 9:30? If the kids are supposed to be up, can't we do something with the Zmanim? You know, that they should be able to fix, you know, that the kids can participate in the Seder. Anyway, but bottom line is that now we understand why Chazal was so concerned about Zilzel and so on to see to it that, you know, we treat the Yom Tov Sheni with the proper kind of respect. I'll just end off. I mentioned the Ksav Sofer. I have it here. Yeah, the Ksav Sofer's father has an interesting tshuva, okay, where he mentions the following, and you can take it further if you like. He mentions, you know, that we call it Yom Tov Sheni Shel Golius. Right? Yom Tov Sheni in Chutzlaitz, like I started at the beginning of this year, we're driven out of Eretz Yisrael. But he said, you know, La'asid Lavo, in the Gemara, in the beginning of Gittin, this describes the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael go very far west. You know, into the Mediterranean, into islands, and even way far, parts of Africa that stick up above Eretz Yisrael, without the deal, draw a straight line, all kinds of details. So he said, you know, if we have Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah again, there's going to be a time after the Geula that there'll still be some people have to keep Yom Tov Sheni, okay, because they'll still be too far away for the messengers to get there. We're still doing it based on messengers, and we renew that. So he said, instead of calling Yom Tov Sheni Shel Goyas, we're going to call it Yom Tov Sheni Shel Geula. This is the Sam Sofer, and it's Tshuvas Chelek Orchaim, the end of Simon Kuf Mem Hey. Okay? And one wonders, well, I guess we'll find out at the right time, but one wonders if perhaps, you know, there'll be some idea, even without that concern of the Sam Sofer, if the lowest level, people keep 2 days just to remember what, you know, what used to be done. We used to have 2 days of Yontef. Okay? That I don't know. Maybe we'll have also this concept of Yontef Shein Shul Geula. But in any event, that gives us some insight into not wearing tefillin. And to why we, again, forego this mitzvah d'oraisa on account of Yom Tov Sheni. Again, the widespread, despite the Ragachov's comment that he thinks it's right to put on tefillin, again, I'm not saying he did, and he writes Lula Poskim, but he finds it a little difficult to understand all these reasons why we don't, but again, the Rashbo already wrote, go see what people do, l'maisa, nobody puts on tefillin. As for Chalamayim, now I'll have to talk about it a different time. I wish everybody a good Shabbos and welcome back from Pesach. We'll continue with Shabbos next week. A good Shabbos to all.
Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.